Today is Friday, January 10th. I'm just going to be going over a book in which I've gone over previously, which I think it's a really good book for humanity. No matter what you believe in, I think it's a good book on medicine and on spirituality and just overall, just a great book. It's that book on astrotheology and shamanism, Christianity's Pagan Roots by Jan Irvin and Andrew Rutatit. I apologize if I pronounce that wrong. The illustrations are done by Nicholas Zavros. Excuse me, let me take a drink, water. I'm going to try to make this not so dry. This is going to be a very, I like to go through everything first before, and then actually start to kind of like place the pieces together. And that's kind of how I do things personally in my life, is I just kind of read through everything, take in all that information, and then try to present it later in a way in which is acceptable. At least that's what I try to do. Here we have on page XVI, whatever that is in Roman numerals. This is just so I can go back later and reference this and place the pictures in there for you, is the cathedral portal of Notre Dame, Paris, France. The Gospels quote Jesus as saying, "I am the door." It is obvious that one does not walk up to a door and just stand there. You walk through it. So I can actually, you know, go ahead and reiterate on this a little bit more right now. And it's basically the difference between, you know, knowing the path. It's the difference between book learning and truly stepping into consciousness and one's true will. There's a difference between simply having the knowledge and just saying, okay, well, that's interesting, but not really applying it onto our planet, into the manifested reality. So you walk through it. You don't just stare at the door. You have to walk through the door. You know, and there's a lot of people just they're staring at the door, and they're just standing at the door, but they're not walking through the door. Now, you can take that however you want to take it. You could take that as a literal initiation into a secret society, however you want to take that. But to me, it's about becoming conscious and taking right action in the world and manifesting it into this reality. Though there are those who would, you know, claim also, you know, this is the world, and, you know, there's rules to abide by in the planet. You know, take it how you may. As we are entering a new age, we must leave the age of Christianity and move on. We have stood at the doorstep of spiritual evolution long enough. The time has come for humankind to enter the temple, to walk through the door. Page 1, Part 1, the Aquarius Initiation. The Aquarius Initiation is a people's worldwide initiation into the ancient occult mysteries. So it's a worldwide initiation, the peoples, all peoples. That means all peoples. Now, I jump from a lot of different topics. I'll say, you know, people is a legal term, which it is. It can't be construed as a legal term. You know, when you say people and you look in the Black Law Dictionary, the term people in all capital letters means something a lot different. So I like to say the term human being, I don't like to use the term people. No longer are the mysteries to be reserved for the ancient secret societies. Okay, so I want to reiterate, no longer are the mysteries to be reserved for the ancient secret societies or contemporary groups of men practicing authoritarian elitism. Okay, it's no longer. Very clearly states that. Now, if you follow these guidelines, I don't understand why individuals would claim to be protectors of some type of knowledge when really they're just kind of like forestalling the inevitable. Astral theology and shamanism is about dismantling the knowledge. Disseminating the knowledge of the heavens and the earth by providing a fundamental understanding in the fields of astral theology and shamanism. Both are equally important in finding our place in history and understanding religious history itself. Failing to understand the mystic nature of both astral theology and shamanism has been a tragic oversight by many researchers and truth seekers. Searching for the truth is a lifelong devotion. It is not something that can be handed to someone in a word or a sentence or even a single book. Truth is an understanding that only the observer can comprehend. So that's what I say about people who love to go to books and say, well, this is what it says in this book. And, you know, book knowledge is fine. You know, all words are living and breathing words, but you can't. That's not the ultimate truth. The ultimate truth is within each individual. And like I said, it's one thing. Okay, yeah, we know this, but you're not walking. So it's the difference between knowing it and walking the path. You know, and me personally, I use sort of techniques I use personally, but everyone has their own technique. Living a life in the quest for truth and convincing others of the truth can be quite difficult when popular belief and truth are on opposite sides of the same coin. Manly Palmer Hall spoke of truth not as a word, doctrine, system, philosophy, or religion. Hall often said that the truth is alive, is a conscious creature in and of itself. It has its own beginnings and it has its own ends. These beginnings and endings, whether they are conscious or not, are what we call paradigm shifts. And as truth goes through these great cycles, so shall humankind. The age of Aquarius is said to be the age when today's mysteries become tomorrow's common understanding. The age of information, the age of enlightenment. In the first part of this book, we will provide evidence that the Earth entire physical new age, quote unquote, every 2150 years, based on proven astronomy and the planetary precession of the equinoxes. This is if you want to look into the Yuga cycles, Lost Star, Myth and Time. This is a great book to read on that. Based on proven astronomy and planetary precession of the equinoxes, you show how this has shaped religious symbolism and philosophy throughout history. Of utmost importance to our study is the fact that we are physically leaving the old age of Pisces and beginning the new age of Aquarius. On May 5th, 2000, there was a grand planetary alignment. This came directly on the heels of the grand cross of August 18, 1999 and the solar eclipse of August 11, 1999. These events marked the end of the Aztec calendar, and many people have accepted this rare occurrence as the beginning of the new age. Others will argue, though speculation, that the end of the Mayan calendar on December 21st, 2012 marks the start of the new age. Precessional motion, as we know, moves backwards through the zodiac. And a problem arises when we consider that the end of the age of Pisces occurs when the vernal point is actually at zero Pisces, preparing to enter 29 degrees Aquarius. You can also look into, now I've been recently applying Manila's Astronomica to with the dodecahedrons, basically with the sort of like a flat earth model. And you can look at, imagine if you were to take that, and then I also have a graph in which I'll post on here, and basically imagine it as like a cone, okay, and imagine that cone, it goes down to like a ray, especially if you take the flat earth model into consideration. Then you can also apply the Nakasatras to this as well. Now I know it's a sidereal zodiac as well, and there's also, I know about, there's 13 zodiac signs. I know a little bit about that, but I'm just asking you to research that and apply it. Moving on. Precessional motion, as we know, moves backward through the zodiac, and a problem arises when we consider that the end of the age of Pisces occurs when the vernal point is actually zero Pisces. Preparing to enter 29 degrees Aquarius rather than the last degree. Of Pisces. However, perhaps we should acknowledge a hidden intention with Western astrology tradition and take the notion of Pisces as the last zodiacal age at face value. Doing so, Western astrology proclaims that the zero time of precession is when the age of Pisces, the last quote-unquote zodiacal sign, ends, which would be sometime in the next two centuries. From this perspective, the zero time of Western astrology appears to be in general accord with the Maya end times. Now, the Enochian system of astrology is a lot more in depth. I think it actually goes more into not only this is my theory in which I'm writing about in a historical, I guess you can call it historical fiction book, that it's actually not just the zodiac of our planet, it's the zodiac of other planetary systems. And to me, that's where people don't understand that zodiac system so well, the Enochian system. Precessional motion, as we know, moves backwards through the zodiac sign. And a problem arises when we consider that the end of the age of Pisces occurs when the vernal point is actually zero Pisces, preparing to enter 29 degrees Aquarius, rather than the quote-unquote last degree of Pisces. So I think you can apply, you know, what I just said, and perhaps try to figure out what that problem, perhaps I'll figure out that problem. Most religions are and were based on this ancient knowledge of and reverence for, quote-unquote, the heavens. This knowledge has been withheld from the general public. Global knowledge and understanding of the ancient mysteries has not happened in recorded history. Previously, small and intimate mystery schools and secret societies were the only ways to be initiated into the secret teachings of all ages. In the present day, bits and pieces of the mysteries are told in various ways. The pieces are hidden in religion, television shows, movies, music, and other media. However, the majority will still overlook or even demonize the core teachings of astrotheology and shamanism. So now we're going to go into understanding the law of duality. Now, I don't want to confuse this. I don't like dialectics so much, switching, you know, over to left brain, right brain. This is very a mainstream institution way of teaching people. Using, I think it's called... I have to look it up, but Hegelian dialectics, I believe it's called. is the language they teach, and that basically essentially throws you into a mental schism. Okay, the law of duality, before I even get into this, is just everything's male and female. Everything is dualistic in nature. Everything has a male and a female counterpart. As above, so below, figures 3, 4, and 5 are all representatives of the Yggdrasil tree, which portray the concept that which is above is also below. So I also want to take that concept into the fact that we live in... People wonder why buildings don't last and dilapidate. Well, we live in a circular, generative universe, and we're building buildings in which are square. So if you take that into account, as above, so below, buildings should not be built, in my opinion, in boxes, because everything's boxed. Everything's boxed in box schools. Square classrooms, everything's boxes, and that's not the way the universe is shaped. It's generative. Even if in a flat Earth model, the Earth's generative. Okay, it's a generative principle. So by building structures in a square shape in a circular universe, you're essentially destroying the generative principle and disrupting the natural flow of humanity, just by the buildings you build. It'd be like placing a different type of hardware onto a computer system and expecting it to malfunction completely correctly the way in which it was built. But the fact is that you've placed alien software into it and it's not functioning, because you could think of, you know, each block, you know, on a grid, sort of like a computer chip in a way. So everything's square. I mean, it's not supposed to be square, it's supposed to be circular. Figure 3 depicts the leaves reaching up the sky with the bird Equa, sometimes called Sophia, which is mine. Sophia is mine. And the tree displaying its wing. Notice the tree and its roots under the ground where the dirt has been stripped away, showing the underworld, known as the chthonic realm. The chthonic realm is the dwelling place of the serpent, winding its way around the root system of the tree. The wings above the serpent. Deer are also present. The image is applied all throughout religion, alchemy, and mysticism. Figure 4 is showing the branches that extend into the heavens, as well as the branches' roots that anchor the tree to the earth. As in the heavens, so on earth. This dualistic philosophy is applied throughout religion. Now, I don't like to use, I have to reiterate here, because a lot of people like to, you know, try to argue with me on notions, not really argue, but kind of use it as a discrediting tool. I don't like to use the word religion. You know, I don't really like to use the word, I guess the word philosophy is okay, but religion, I don't like to use the word religion. Because to me, religion means to relegate, you know, to bind. So, I don't like to use that word, you know, we can just use throughout, you know, all sacred teachings, because all books are all sacred teachings, all sacred books. The further out into the heavens we go, we see the world tree. The axis of the earth, the poles, is now acting as a tree, branching out onto the heavens, above the earth and below the earth. One of the great motifs of a myth is the wondrous tree, so often described as reaching up to heaven. There are many of them. The ash, Yzari, and the Ida, the world-darkening oak. Now remember, oak is a real popular tree all throughout mythology, even in Irish legend. And I know I speak on, you know, different councils and different theories of the, you know, such as the Grand Druid Council and other such organizations. So it's not that these teachings are all evil.